Okay, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're plunging into something really fundamental to how countries run. It affects your wallet, your job, pretty much everything. We're talking fiscal policy.
That's right. And we've got some great source material here that, you know, really spells out how governments use their financial muscle, taxing and spending to shape the economy.
Yeah, and our mission for this deep dive is to cut through the jargon, really. Use this material to give you the core understanding. We'll hit the budget, national debt, taxes, where the money actually goes.
And even how economists try to visualize all this with things like the aggregate demand, aggregate supply model.
Exactly. Getting those essential insights straight from the source.
Couldn't have put it better.
Right. So let's jump straight in. Starting at square one, the government budget, the financial blueprint.
Okay, the budget? Mm-hmm. The source describes it pretty clearly. It's basically a statement, right? A formal plan showing expected income revenue and planned spending expenditure.
Usually over a year, the fiscal period.
Exactly, a fiscal year.
So it's not just bean counting then. What's its real purpose, according to the source?
Oh, much more than that. The source really stresses it's a key tool. It's about allocating resources, who gets what. It's also about income redistribution, trying to address inequality.
Okay.
And crucially, it's meant to help stabilize the whole economy, keep things on an even keel, ideally.
And the basic structure seems pretty standard. Money comes in, money goes out, revenue, mostly taxes, and then spending, the source breaks that down into capital and current spending.
That's the one. And how those two sides balance out or don't is key. You get three types of budgets described. Balanced, where revenue equals spending.
Makes sense.
A surplus, where they bring in more than they spend. And the one we hear about a lot.
Yeah.
A deficit, spending more than you earn.
And the source argues that a well-put-together budget isn't just, you know, good housekeeping. It actually supports economic growth, public welfare, builds infrastructure. It really shows a government's hand.
Which kind of leads to the question for you, listening. When you hear about the budget, does knowing if it's a deficit or surplus and where the money's coming from and going help you figure out what the government actually prioritizes? Because really, it's their clearest statement.
Yeah, absolutely. Which takes us right into those outcomes, deficits, and surpluses. The source makes it clear these aren't just numbers on a page. They have real effects.
For sure. A budget deficit spending more than you get in taxes that year means you have to borrow. Simple as that.
And that borrowing adds to the national debt. We'll circle back to that big topic shortly.
Right. But the source also flags potential long-term issues if deficits keep happening. Things like possibly higher inflation.
Oh.
Maybe crowding out private companies looking to borrow money and potentially over time making investors a bit nervous.
But there's a flip side, isn't there? Especially in the short term.
Yeah, this is interesting. The source points out that deficit spending, whether it's the government spending more or cutting taxes, tends to actually stimulate the economy. It pumps money in.
Okay, so a boost in the short run. What about the opposite? A surplus, taking in more than you spend.
Well, that gives the government options. According to the source, they can use that extra cash to pay down the national debt, maybe save it for future projects, or build up a buffer for, you know, the next economic downturn.
So the core difference the source highlights is deficits can give a short-term kick but risk long-term debt issues. Surpluses mean discipline, maybe paying down debt, but if they're too tight, they could slow things down.
That's the balancing act, essentially. Stimulus versus discipline.
So when you hear those debates raging about government spending, understanding whether they're talking deficit or surplus really tells you their underlying strategy.
Precisely. And that borrowing needed for deficits leads us straight to the national debt. It's a huge number, often in the news. What exactly is it, based on the source?
The source defines it as the grand total, the accumulation of all the money the government has borrowed over the years because of those budget deficits minus whatever it's paid back.
Right, the sum of past borrowing. And the material breaks down into two main types. Internal debt.
Owed to people and institutions inside the country, like banks, pension funds, citizens holding bonds.
Exactly. And then external debt, which is money owed to foreign governments, international bodies like the IMF or World Bank, or foreign investors.
And the significance, the source seems to see both positives and negatives.
Definitely. On the plus side, debt can fund really important large-scale projects. Think infrastructure, things that benefit everyone and boost productivity. It also lets governments step in and stimulate the economy during recessions when tax money is tight.
But the downsides can be serious, according to the source. High debt means big interest payments, right? Less money for schools or healthcare.
For sure. It's often seen as passing the buck to future generations who have to deal with it. And it can limit how much a government can borrow or spend if another crisis hits. Less flexibility.
So the challenge is using debt wisely for investment or emergencies, but not letting it get so big it becomes a problem in itself. That seems to be the core tension.
It really is. And remember, this isn't just an abstract number. The national debt influences interest rates, government options, and, you know, the economic future you'll be living in.
Okay, so that's the debt side. Now let's talk about where the money originates to fund spending or manage that debt. Taxation. The source gives a pretty thorough overview here.
Yeah, taxes are the engine, but they do more than just raise money. The source lists, obviously, revenue generation is the main one. Got to pay for public services.
Right, the basics. But what else?
Well, income redistribution is a big one. Using the tax system, especially progressive taxes, to try and reduce the gap between high and low earners often goes hand in hand with welfare programs.
Okay.
And taxes can be used to nudge behavior. Think taxes on cigarettes or alcohol sin taxes or demerit goods, as the source calls them, trying to discourage people from using them.
And also for stabilization, like adjusting taxes up or down to manage the economy.
Exactly. Raising taxes might cool down an overheating economy. Cutting them might stimulate a sluggish one. Another lever.
The source breaks down the types of taxes too. Direct taxes.
Those are levied straight on people or companies. Like income tax deducted from your pay, or the corporate tax businesses pay on profits.
Got it. And indirect taxes.
Those are collected on spending. VAT, sales tax, excise duties on things like fuel or specific goods. You pay them as part of the price when you buy something.
And how these taxes are structured makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Who actually ends up paying? The source mentions progressive taxes.
Right, where the tax rate goes up as your income goes up. The idea is that higher earners contribute a larger percentage. That's aimed directly at redistribution.
Then there's regressive tax.
Yeah, that takes a bigger chunk, percentage-wise, from lower income folks. Sales tax on essentials is often cited as an example, because poorer people spend a larger proportion of their income on basic goods.
And proportional tax.
That's a flat tax. Everyone pays the same percentage rate, no matter their income level.
And we also hear about different tax rates, the marginal rate of taxation, or MRT.
That's a key one. It's the rate you pay on the next dollar or pound or euro you earn. It affects the incentive to earn more, basically.
As opposed to the average rate of taxation, ARRT.
Which is just your total tax bill divided by your total income. It gives you the overall percentage you paid. The source makes the point that both rates matter, but the marginal rate really influences economic decisions at the edge.
So yeah, every time you get paid or buy something, you're bumping into these concepts. Understanding the difference between progressive and regressive, direct and indirect, marginal and average, it helps you make sense of tax policies you hear about.
Absolutely. So with revenue sorted, let's flip the coin. Government spending. Why do governments spend, according to the source?
Well, one big reason is providing things the market might not, or not well enough. Public goods, like national defense, police, the legal system.
Right. And another huge one is investing in infrastructure. We mentioned this with debt roads, schools, hospitals. The source calls this capital spending, and stresses it boosts the economy's long-term potential.
Governments also spend on welfare, right? Social safety nets, poverty reduction, and investing in people. Education, healthcare, improving human capital.
Yep. And as we've touched upon, spending is also a tool for economic stabilization, increasing it in downturns, maybe trimming it in booms.
The source draws a distinction between that long-term investment spending, capital spending, and what was the other?
Current spending. That's the day-to-day running costs. Public sector wages, pensions, subsidies, keeping the lights on in government buildings, maintaining current services.
Okay, so capital builds for the future. Current keeps things running now.
Pretty much.
And that's where your tax money is going. So when you hear about budget cuts or increases, knowing if it's hitting long-term investment or immediate services is pretty important. That distinction from the source is key.
Definitely. So we've got the building blocks. Budgets, debt, taxes, spending. Now the source brings it together under the heading of fiscal policy in action. The two main approaches governments take.
Right, expansionary and contractionary fiscal policy. This is the government actively trying to steer the economy using those tools.
Exactly. Expansionary fiscal policy is all about boosting aggregate demand total spending in the economy.
Yeah.
How? The source says increase government spending or cut taxes. Or both.
And you'd use this when? During a recession, high unemployment.
That's the typical scenario, yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to jumpstart growth, get people spending and businesses hiring.
So the aim is growth, more jobs. But the source mentions potential downsides.
Yeah, it can fuel inflation if the economy is already running hot. And obviously, it usually means bigger budget deficits, adding to the debt.
Okay. And the opposite, contractionary fiscal policy.
That aims to reduce aggregate demand. You do that by cutting government spending or raising taxes.
And the time for that would be when the economy's booming, maybe too fast, and inflation is becoming a worry.
Precisely. Trying to cool things down, take some heat out of the economy.
The goal is controlling inflation. But the trade-off, the source notes, could be slower economic growth, maybe even a rise in unemployment.
It's a delicate balance. And the source wisely adds that how well either policy works depends a lot on the specifics, the timing, how big the changes are, what else is going on in the economy. It's not automatic.
But these are the main levers we hear about. Stimulus packages, that's expansionary. Austerity measures, that sounds like contractionary policy in action.
You got it. And to really understand how these policies are thought to work, the source brings in the aggregate demand, aggregate supply model, the ADS framework.
Right, let's quickly sketch that out. Aggregate demand, AD total spending from everyone, consumers, businesses, government, foreigners. Aggregate supply, AS total output firms want to produce. On the graph, price level is vertical, real GDP or output is horizontal.
Good summary. So the source explains expansionary policy, more government spending, lower taxes increases one or more parts of that AD equation, C, I, or G.
C for consumption, I for investment, G for government spending.
Right. This shifts the AD curve on the graph to the right.
And a rightward shift means higher output, more income, more jobs, a higher real GDP equilibrium. But yeah. The model also shows a higher overall price level, potential inflation.
Exactly. And the source points out a key risk. If the economy is already near full capacity, everyone's working, factories are busy pushing AD further right, might mostly just cause prices to shoot up without much gain in actual output.
Okay, so diminishing returns, potentially just inflation. What about contractionary policy through the ADS lens, cutting spending or raising taxes?
That reduces aggregate demand. It shifts the AD curve to the left.
And a leftward shift results in lower real GDP, so less output, potentially fewer jobs,
right.
But also a lower price level.
Correct. The aim is to fight inflation, but the cost might be slower growth or higher unemployment, according to the model.
So this ADS model really helps visualize those trade-offs governments constantly face. Boost the economy, risk inflation, fight inflation, risk slowing the economy.
It does. And the source also briefly mentions how different schools of economic thought interpret this. Keynesians, for instance, tend to believe fiscal policy, especially expansionary policy during downturns, can effectively shift AD and significantly boost real output and jobs.
They're more optimistic about government intervention working.
Generally, yes. Whereas monetarists, also mention the source, are often more skeptical. They might argue that while fiscal policy shifts AD and causes inflation, in the long run, the economy gravitates back to its natural output level anyway, so fiscal policy mainly just messes with prices.
So same model, different interpretations of the results and the long-run effects.
Pretty much. The model provides the framework, but the assumptions about how sticky prices are or how quickly the economy adjusts lead to different policy conclusions.
Wow. Okay, that covers a huge amount of ground. We've gone from the budget itself through deficits, debt, taxes, spending, then the actual policies, expansionary and contractionary.
Yeah.
And finally, seeing the impact through that ADIS model.
Yeah, the source material really paints a comprehensive picture. And it makes it clear, fiscal policy isn't just some technical thing accountants worry about. It's a primary tool governments use that affects demand, jobs, inflation, growth, everything.
Absolutely essential to understand if you want to make sense of economic news and government actions.
No doubt.
And thinking about those different views, the Keynesian focus on stimulus, the monetarist worry about inflation, the trade-offs shown in the ADAS model, it really makes you ponder, doesn't it? How should a government balance boosting growth against controlling inflation and managing debt? Especially when the experts themselves don't always agree on the best path or the long-term consequences.
It seems like there's rarely, if ever, a single right answer that satisfies everyone or works perfectly in all situations.
That fundamental challenge, juggling those competing goals with these powerful yet imperfect tools, that really is the heart of the fiscal policy debate, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It demands constant assessment, difficult choices, and adapting to ever-changing economic realities.
A really crucial point to end on. Thanks so much for guiding us through this material. Incredibly insightful.